and welcome into the Who's On Podcast, part of the Saber Podcast Network. We are back talking about UVA basketball today. We got a great guest coming on, Cuts from the Corner. We missed talking about UVA's win last week over Boston College, so unfortunately we're coming to you after another loss, this time to Notre Dame. But Cuts, thanks for coming on. I hope we can just kind of shed a little bit of light on what's going on with the Who's this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, like I said, another loss to Notre Dame. This was the first time, I couldn't believe it actually, the first time Notre Dame has ever won a game in Charlottesville. And they did it pretty emphatic fashion. Virginia kind of cut it down a little bit late. They were never going to cover because I think Notre Dame went in as a 1.5 point favorite in this game. But yeah, so it wasn't pretty out there. Virginia now 16th in the ACC standings. Of course, the top 15, as Virginia fans are now very aware, the top 15 make the ACC tournament, actually get to go to Charlotte. How concerned or invested are you in this Virginia team making it into the ACC tournament?
A little of both, I think. You know, I'm invested as a fan. I think, you know, you don't want to see the guys miss out. You want to see the players get that opportunity to play. You know, I'd like to have something to root for that time of the year still, you know. And I think, you know, so as a fan, I'm rooting for them to make it, and I'll be following that. You know, I think practically speaking, given how this year has gone, it might just be better to kind of move on as quickly as possible from this season. But as a fan, you know, I try not to think that way. I'm still sort of, you know, rooting for them to do as well as they can, or at least to some of these guys who have been with the program for a while or even new, just have those, you know, positive moments, at least some, you know, memories of playing in the tournament and competing.
It's kind of similar. We were talking about the NFL right before we got on. It's similar to, like, do you just want to keep losing and, you know, get that high draft pick? Obviously, there's no high draft pick in this situation, but do you want to hit rock bottom and just kind of end the season, get a head start on the offseason? And what we are all assuming at this point is going to be a national coaching search that, you know, might already be underway as far as we know. Or do you just want to, like, all right, I don't want to hit that low. I don't want to go that low because I want this program to bounce back.
Yeah, I think I always like to root for wins, but I think there is at least some, like, at least I'm at a point, and I'm sure we'll talk about this later, where I don't want to, like, kind of, I guess, give the sense that maybe this is still the path forward. You know, like, I don't want to get too much hope where, like, we kind of, like, I think what we're seeing now is sort of a good reflection of, you know, how things need to change. And so I do think, you know, that's going to be the case really, regardless of whether we get some momentum toward the end of the year.
I looked this up. Of course, already 7 losses in ACC play. There are only 3 seasons since Tony Bennett arrived in Charlottesville that they have more. Can you name which ones you think they are?
Jeez. The NIT year, maybe.
Which one?
21, 22.
Yeah, the most recent one, I think. Yeah. Is that 21, 22?
Yeah. Yeah. Was it? Yeah. 21, 20, yeah. 22. Yep. Yep. Yeah, so I would guess that one, his first year here.
Yep.
And then his second year here?
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. Yeah, first 2 years, and then the NIT year. And they've had a couple other 7 loss years, but, I mean, to be at this point already, and the calendar hadn't even flipped to February, is kind of a statement of just kind of where the program is. And of course, they play a lot more ACC games now than they used to, but also at the same time, it's still only January, as I mentioned. So, anything that kind of stuck before we get into a fun game we got coming up later, anything that kind of stood out to you from this Notre Dame game?
I mean, I think it's the fact that, I mean, they lost 5 of their last 6. They're not a very good team. I mean, there's some potential there, but we made them look pretty unguardable at times, which was alarming. You know, I think a lot of it was, there was a level of kind of going through the motions with the guys that we really haven't seen, certainly under Coach Bennett. We've seen at times this year, that's been unfortunately too much of a trend. You know, after watching them play against Boston College, obviously Boston College isn't very good either, but, you know, it was nice to see a little, you know, positivity. And then that was sort of immediately snapped away against a team opponent that's not really that much better. So, you know, Not that that's surprising given how the rest of the season's gone, but that's sort of what stood out to me is the sort of the level of effort at times and going through the motions.
I know there's a lot of concern just because of Marcus Burton and the type of player he is. And obviously, he's one of the best guards in the ACC. Clearly, he scored 21 points in this game. But I was kind of the belief that, he's gotten his against pretty much any team he's played this year. So there's only so much you can do there. And, maybe Virginia doesn't have that defensive stopper. But to see just the team as a whole for Notre Dame kind of, play pretty well. I like the way they move the ball. And, Tate Davis, I thought was a good player for them. 6 rebounds, 5 assists to go along with his 16 points. Brayden Shrewsbury had to hit a couple threes in this one. Alaco hit a couple threes. So it was kind of just, and you look at the box score outside of the field goal percentage and 3-point percentage, there's nothing that really stood out to me. Like, there's nothing that they were like just drastically better than Virginia. I mean, they hit 27 field goals and Virginia hit 23, but again, the final score was 74 to 59. It just kind of
I mean, we got
drastic.
lost in some rotations. We were slow in some rotations. I think that there's just sort of like a, I don't know, it seemed like a mental block at times where you just, I don't know if the team is sort of starting to wrap its mind around the situation they're in or what it is. But, once Notre Dame got, a little bit of a lead, kind of like we've seen in some of the other games where we've been competitive early, but then once we've sort of started to lose it, it's really spiraled pretty quickly.
I wanted to ask you because you've kind of put a pause on your work this year. How are you watching these games now since you're not going through these deep film reviews?
I mean, more as a fan, I did stop, and it's funny because when I started doing this, I always said, okay, well, you're not going to stop if the team kind of stops being good, right? And the reason that changed this year, though, I think is because, first of all, at one point it started to feel a little bit like piling on, you're kind of saying the same criticisms over and over again, and going that deep into it when there's not much that's probably going to change seemed a little bit excessive. But like also, in the past, there's always been like a level of, okay, well, what are we playing for next year? But I think at this point, it seems clear like next year is such a wild card and unknown. Who knows how, like, it's really hard to say what among this group is going to be even around next year, what that's going to look like. So, I am anticipating a busy off season and kind of needing to store my reserves and energy for that. A lot of new players, not a lot of, maybe a new system, new coaches, to dive into. So I'm sort of looking at this year as kind of just more of a, pure fan perspective, and then trying to, appreciate, Coach Sanchez was put in a tough situation. He's put in a lot of time here over the years, sort of appreciate, his time here, appreciate some of the players who have been here for a while, and just kind of look at it as, like a farewell tour of sorts, potentially.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's tough. I mean, like you're saying, it feels like piling on at times. As writers, we're trying to figure out what kind of angles we can take and how to talk about this team in a different way, and even just how do you cover some of these players? Because, like you mentioned, in this day and age, with the transfer portal and NIL and everything that's going on, you feel like you can hit rock bottom as a fan pretty quickly because you don't have that kind of hope that you would normally have with, well, this isn't going great, but at least, like things will kind of turn over next year, but we'll have some of these players that'll get a little bit older. You have no idea what's going to happen going into the off season. And that's how it's so unique now. There is optimism that, I think things can turn really quickly as we've seen with some other programs. But there's also the pessimism of like, well, what if they don't get it right? And things kind of start to spiral downwards even further. But I think we'll talk about this later, but I still have a pretty good confidence that this is a good job in college basketball, one of the better jobs in college basketball, and will be pretty desirable. And I know some people are joking about, the level of candidates and who wants to come here, but talking to people around, like I think they got some pretty serious targets, and I think they kind of recognize the way and kind of the age of the college basketball and where they want to go with this program. But let's go on to our game today. It's going to be UVA hoops either or. So I'm going to give you some statements. It's going to be either this or this. And you got to tell me which you think is the actual reason. And starting with one that's been on my mind for much of this season, especially after seeing, give up 80 plus points to Stanford or, or some of the earlier games this year, and then seeing Notre Dame, which is the team that hasn't scored the ball super well this year, score 74, and it could have been more down the stretch of that game. Either the Pac line defense is dead or Virginia doesn't have the right personnel. And I'll give some stats real quick just to tee you up. Virginia that currently this year ranks 181st nationally in defensive efficiency. That's their worst mark since 2007, 2008. So we're not even going to Dave Leto's last year. They were 180th that year, so it's not that far off. But his second to last year. So back to those Dave Leto teams, but Tony Bennett has never had a team rank this low in defensive efficiency. So again, either the Pac line defense is dead or Virginia doesn't have the right personnel. What do you think?
So, I mean, the answer is both, but if you're going to make me pick one, I'll say it's dead, but I'll kind of give some explanation for both. I
Please
mean, if
do.
Yeah, so if I were starting a program from scratch, like we might be, not from scratch, but in terms of deciding what to bring in, I wouldn't pick the pack line defense to do it. It takes a long time to learn, master. There's no guarantee around continuity, so you need something people can pick up a little bit quicker. It was sort of developed and created in a world where the 3-point shot wasn't like as much of a part of the game. The 3-point line was even closer. Everything was more packed in. And also, like, the amount of time and energy and practice that goes into perfecting it, there's an opportunity cost there where you're taking away from other things like offensive systems and what have you. From that perspective, I would say the pack line is dead in the sense that I wouldn't want it to be the defensive choice moving forward under a new program. That being said, I think, the pack line defense can be very effective. I mean, if Tony Bennett were still here and still coaching it, and he had, more athletic players. I mean, he actually had enough athletic players to run it last year, but he defaulted more toward offense, which still wasn't very good in experience. But he had the athletes, I think, to run it better last year. But they still had a top 10 defense last year because Dunn and Beekman were so good. I think if you flesh that out throughout the lineup, a sort of master of his craft at defense like him could coach that defense and have it be very suffocating. But he's not still here. I think it's a rare talent to be able to do that. And, given all the other limitations, I think of the system, I would default toward instead if I had to pick one of those two.
When you go back to when they expanded the 3-point arc, how much of that do you think has kind of impacted things over these past couple seasons?
Yeah, I mean, a lot. I think it's that. And it's also like the NBA sort of like, there's a delay, but it flows into the college game, right? Like, when we were winning national championships, Steph Curry had been doing his thing for a little bit, and that sort of expanded the range everyone was shooting these shots from. People saw that, oh, it's not, if you shoot a 3-point shot, that's great, but if you can shoot it from even further back, it extends the defense more and makes it harder to guard, right? And so then you had the Trae Youngs and a lot of guys, and now, so many players have that extended range, right? So yes, the 3-point line in college sort of forced people to practice that shot and extend it even more. But I think also sort of the evolution of basketball at the NBA level was going to lead there anyway. So yeah, I mean, it's both, but I think it's one kind of major piece working together to make it so that the 3-point shot's a much bigger part of the game now.
And I asked that question because we talk about, kind of the level of athleticism, and the or part of this question is it the personnel? And Virginia's had some good athletes over the years, some really good athletes. If you look at like a Justin Anderson, DeAndre Hunter, but they haven't had the best athletes on the court always. But they've made the defense work. But the thing I've noticed over the last couple of years, it just seems like the closeouts are so slow. And part of that's due to the level of athlete. But over the past couple of years, also, it's a little bit further to go.
And it's funny, closeouts have even changed, right? Like in the NBA, you run people off the line now, like, right? And that's kind of where the game's headed in the college level too, whereas the pack line is a much more like traditional closeout where you chop your feet and you slow. I mean, so even that is a little different. So yeah, there's a lot about the defense that's not as designed to defend against the modern day game. And I think, if we're moving forward, picking up a system and implementing one that is I guess, simpler to run, or at the very least, more designed to defend the current game would be better.
And I asked Isaac McNeely, who obviously has been in the system for a couple of years now. So if anyone on the roster knows it, it's probably him. And just asking him, would you have ever thought you would be having these kind of defensive issues as a team at a Virginia program, obviously well known for their defense? And he was like, no, absolutely not. To your point, in that Notre Dame game, it was funny watching some of the guys like, just in the lane, losing their guy in the paint, just a couple moves. It wasn't anything earth-shattering that Notre Dame was running. They were just losing players, the lack of, knowledge on switches and how to guard a pick and roll. And it kind of was just a litany of things just kind of happening over and over.
Yeah, I mean, there was a time in that game where we were playing Blake Buchanan, Anthony Robinson, and Elijah Saunders all together. And I've been calling for Saunders to get time at the three all year, and he really hasn't. But like, it was sort of a throwing things at the wall late at the season kind of thing, like where, it's going to be hard. Like they get lost in rotations on the perimeter, and they just didn't have the reps together established over the year. So like, I think there was some room to do some creative things with this roster. I think playing Saunders at the three is one of them. We'll probably talk about that a little bit later. With Kofi more at the four as opposed to the double centers. But I liked the ability to imagine running dual centers and like the options. I think it's just a little late in the year to be trotting that out there, against a sort of a more perimeter focused team anyway in Notre Dame.
Yeah, every time you think the rotation's kind of settled, something kind of comes in to throw a wrench in it. Of course, Ishan Sharma missed the last game against Notre Dame with an illness, so obviously that threw a wrench in it as well. But let's move on to the next one. Either the revamped offense was theoretical or was never a reality. Virginia ranks last in pace right now, 268th in offensive efficiency.
So the offense of revamp was real. I mean, they put in a new offense, and it's different than what we'd done previously. And even though at times we sort of went back to sides and inside triangle this year to try to kind of find a solution, we ended up coming back to the offense. So the revamped offense was real. What wasn't real was sort of the intention around the offense and the philosophy of the style of play, right? And I think that, it's hard to say how much that is a result of, like losing a player like Worley and then sort of going back to our comfort zone because now Coach Bennett isn't there and we're trying to kind of get some semblance of calm and we're having trouble with turnovers and our ball handlers are struggling against pressure. And like, that's probably an element of it. But I think there's still also an element of still passing up good to great shots. And I think, when they talked about sort of increasing the pace, or kind of hustling after makes or whatever and getting shots up, they were probably envisioning certain players taking those shots, right? Like maybe McNeely taking those shots, and that's kind of how they envisioned it, or like getting a layup or something. But like we saw in the Notre Dame game, and I think a student reporter actually asked a question about this post game, and I love that. Shout out to that reporter, great job. But about Kofi passing up shots early in the possession. And Coach Sanchez answered, well, he can get that shot whenever he wants. We want the defense to work and defend, so we don't want him to take that shot early in the shot clock. And I think that was pretty telling in terms of the philosophy is still pass up good for great, run offense and get shots late, right? I think, ideally, you want players shooting open shots if you're going to give them the green light to shoot it anyway. Because it makes defenders defend you. It keeps the players comfortable and in rhythm. It doesn't get them in their head. It does a lot of things. You certainly, you don't want them jacking up contested threes, but like if you have an open look, they should be empowered to shoot it. That's sort of the whole philosophy around sort of increasing your tempo. And especially on a team like ours that struggled offensively all season, turning the ball over, getting contested shots late in the shot clock, it doesn't really make as much sense to pass up those looks to try to get something better when what you're getting later hasn't been great anyway. So, I think the philosophy was a bit of a mirage. We never really embraced what it took to change there, even if the offensive system was real, it was a change.
Yeah, the question with Jacob Kofi, it was an interesting timing to ask the question because he's coming off his career high with 17 points. And also in that second half, I mean, he was shooting it a lot more, was a lot more confident with his shot. And it was almost kind of a moment where you kind of saw a light in his head go off. It's like, why not? Like, why not? Why am I passing these shots up? So he started taking a lot more of them, and obviously it turned into a good game for him. It's hard to kind of tell when, they're so far down in this one, but I thought Kofi was impressive in this game, and it's something that we've wanted to see from him for a while now. But I don't think it's even just Kofi, it's a lot of players, and it's been like this for a couple seasons now. And you thought maybe that they would be a little bit more aggressive, try to shoot a little bit earlier in the clock with this kind of revamped offense. And that's where I kind of say it was theoretical because, yes. Absolutely. Sets have changed. It's less of the size, less of the triangle, but it's still the same kind of core philosophy. And I guess, they kind of warned against that in the preseason. They were saying like, we're not going to change who we are. But maybe you should have changed a little bit more. Yes, you're running new stuff, but you're still using a lot of that shot clock, slowing the game down. Having guys pass up on totally reasonable shots in this day in college basketball. And so it was kind of interesting just and Ron's answer to that was very interesting and not less about Jacob Kofi as an individual, but more as the team philosophy.
To be clear, the question itself was like, I think it was phrased like, what is something wrong with Kofi? And it wasn't about Kofi at all. I think the question itself could have maybe been phrased more along the lines of, or what it got to the heart of, and what I thought was effective, was it got to the philosophy behind why he wasn't shooting those shots, which is something I don't think we've seen as directly answer. I mean, we've heard the sort of pass up good to great, but it was I think telling to hear Coach Sanchez speak about like intentionally telling guys to not take those wide open looks early in the shot clock.
And that's the thing. Sometimes you don't know what they're going to say in response to a question. So throw it out there, see what they say. I mean, I think in the past couple of games, we've been watching it with Kofi all year. Just like he will pass up that three ever since early in the year. When I came on, I was very surprised how well he was shooting earlier in the season, and then it just kind of seemed like it vanished, almost very similarly to Ryan Dunn
Brian
last
Dunn.
year. That's exactly what I thought of, and Kofi's shot looks better than Ryan Dunn's did last year, but just kind of abandoning that 3-point shot as the season went on, and you kind of wonder what's going on there. All right, let's go on to kind of something that I was looking at as I got into some of the statistics for that last question, and this is kind of, I guess, college basketball wide. Either embrace the pace can still work, or it's time to up the pace and run and gun. And I ask this because before the season, we made note that UConn was actually pretty slow in pace. Obviously, light years ahead of Virginia as far as pace, but most teams are. But I was looking at the statistics on pace and possessions per game. Guess who's number two or second to last in the country? It's Drake. Everyone's favorite, mid-major team this year. Tennessee's not that far ahead. Purdue's not that much further ahead. And so it seems like, not necessarily, you don't have to be like these SEC games we're seeing right now that are, kind of turning into NBA marathons with Alabama, Kentucky, Florida, and the likes.
I think it's, I mean, that's a great point. And I think it, what it is it's about intentional offense, right? It's not about a specific pace of offense. I mean, pace can be tied to, a few things if you're trying to play a more up-tempo style, like as a team philosophy, or if, as teams are better, it's often better when you get more possessions in a game. But like, generally speaking, pace isn't the important thing. It's how effective you're running your offense and how intentional are your shots. Like we use UConn as an example last year, and they're just one of the most efficient offensive teams in the country. And I think they were outside of the top 300 in pace. But they spend a lot of time and energy perfecting their offensive system, and they have so many actions they run, and they generate a ton of open looks. So I think, what you want is you want to take those open looks like you get from a Kofi, or you get at times in the possession when you have them, and you want to have a system that generates the best looks as possible. So if that's an early shot, That's great if that's a shot as a result of some great and creative actions that you might see from a UConn or some of those other teams, then I think that's great as well. It doesn't have to be, when we get a new if we get a new system, we need to just up the pace. It just has to be a more offensively focused and confident and intentional system than we have now. You shouldn't be embracing the pace for the purpose of just slowing the game down and forcing everything to the end of the shot clock.
Yeah, I think you said it perfectly, Lear, is just intentional offense. And some of the best Virginia teams, we've seen the intentional offense and we've seen high offensive efficiency numbers. It just hasn't really happened in the last couple of years. And I go back to all the time, one of my favorite hypothetical Virginia teams was that 2020-21 team with Trey Murphy, Sam Hauser, Jay Huff. I would have loved to see what that team would have done in a normal year and without the COVID issues at the end, just because offensively I thought they were really intriguing. And obviously they had some issues defensively because of the personnel, but offensively I thought they were probably one of the more intriguing teams in this kind of the whole run under Tony Bennett, just because they had the shooting, they had the space. And I think that was the year that we were talking about, going into the season, the whole five out offense that Tony Bennett was talking about, that kind of never truly materialized, but it was a fun team to watch.
I think they never really figured out exactly how they wanted to kind of push their advantage there with that team. And I think because of the defensive struggles and you don't spend as much time working on offense because we're so focused on defense, I think what ended up happening with that team is you just sort of went back to your comfort zone on offense and continued to try to get your edge on defense. And I think that cost us a little bit that year. I mean, certainly COVID did, but I think that was sort of one of the regrets I have looking back at that season. And I think it speaks to our sort of inability to kind of get outside of what we've done offensively over the past few years at least, with the team.
It always, takes me back to Tony Bennett saying, "Man, I wish people could have come and see that team because they're a fun watch in person, just being at some of those games." Going to this next one, this might be a little bit longer of a conversation, and I kind of try to put it simply so we could kind of go into multiple angles with this. Either poor roster construction, so with the transfer portal, the big transfer class, or poor coaching, but not just coaching situation with this team. I'll let you go either way with that. And it probably in the end is both.
Yeah, it's absolutely both. I mean, 100% both. I think the roster construction looks a little bit better if you think of it as, okay, we still have Jalen Worley. We still have access to Christian Bliss and Elijah Gertrude doesn't get hurt, right? Like those, I mean, maybe we don't have Worley if Elijah Gertrude doesn't get hurt. I don't know how that plays out exactly, but like, either way, those are pieces that are missing that would be very valuable to a team like this, right? So I think, the idea behind the roster construction, there was some sort of situational misfortune that went into that. Of course, Worley's situation was due to Tony Bennett's retirement, which was a tough situation for Coach Sanchez to inherit. It's worth noting that Worley didn't immediately transfer. He played in some scrimmages and kind of had some time to wrap his mind around it and then eventually moved on. But so I think, but in reality, what ends up happening is we have too many players who are sort of in that shoot first mold that have a hard time creating off of the bounce, right? You have McNeely, Murray, Sharma, and then even TJ Power, even though he didn't end up getting on the court much, he was in a similar, like theoretically, he's there for his shooting. He's not going to be breaking someone down off the dribble. He was even set up to play guard early on. So a lot of that mold of player who aren't really plus defenders, who are looking to get your shots up, who aren't going to break the guys down off the dribble, who aren't going to create. So it put a lot of burden on Day Day Ames, who was more of a score first point guard anyway, and Andrew Rohde, who I think has performed admirably, all things considered this year, but still has his limitations with his foot speed and athleticism at times as well. So From that perspective, there has definitely been, a roster situation that was going to make this a challenge, either way. But I think there's still been a sort of a ton of self-inflicted wounds throughout this season that have kind of made that worse. And I think, some of that is tunnel vision on how we have to use certain players and not being able to see out of that. I think some of that's, a bit of a misassessment as to how some of our players even use. Like, for example, at the end of that SMU game when we brought in Tane, who had been cold because we saw him as one of our best defenders, when in reality, neither the eyeball test nor the data really agree with that. I think there's been some sort of defaulting to experience and kind of viewing things in a certain lens that haven't necessarily been accurate. I also think that there's been some kind of reluctance to try out things. I mean, we have tried out some things, but as a plan throughout the season to kind of develop the full roster. Like early on, we were only using Anthony Robinson when there was foul trouble, even when he was like contributing really positively, like in the Memphis game. I've talked about Saunders kind of never being utilized at the small forward, even though we've had issues at the guard spot all year, kind of trying to play bigger and maybe play some different ways around that. There was some odd use of Data Ames when he was getting back from his injury after he'd been playing so well. And all in all, putting TJ Power in kind of in late situations when the game was still close and we were really struggling. I mean, just a lot of sort of game roster management issues that have been kind of confusing and haven't really seemed like the plan is as intentional. It's more like we've been kind of just trying to get certain guys their time and kind of keep people happy, which all in all hasn't really led to the most productive outcomes.
No, and I kind of lean towards roster construction because I know there are some things that maybe this coaching staff could have done differently, but also at the same time, you factor in the situation, how much were they going to be able to do things differently than what they had been working on in the preseason? Like they didn't have a whole lot of time to kind of like, have that really imprint their own ideas and everything. And I know you get some time over the course of a season, but not to make huge strategic decisions. And like you said, like the situation, that's partly Jalen Worley leaving. That's partly the whole Christian Bliss saga, whatever you want to make of that, that is kind of shoestring them. So that's why I kind of lean towards just the roster construction as a whole, because I also go back to we're talking about Elijah Saunders playing the three, and that is something I've been wanting to see. And I can't think of it. I mean, is there another time other than this Notre Dame game where he's really gotten minutes there?
No, I mean, early in the season they did it like a couple of plays, but like literally just a few. And it like and these are the things I think that if you're seeing we're as limited as we've been, especially at guard play, and just overwhelmed at times in some of those early games, like against like St. John's and Tennessee, like you gotta at that point be, I think, willing to really shake it up and try that out and give that game reps, especially in some of those non-conference games when we were kind of going to comfortably win, but maybe it was a little closer and we really were just kind of sticking to the same thing. And I just, I think that there were some, there's, I guess there's been just sort of throughout the year, yes, there was lack of preparation time, but there's also been sort of a lack of answers and just like willingness to, I mean, even simple things like let's play through the post more, right? Let's play through Kofi more down low. Let's play through more in the high post. Let's force more of our offense. Let's play through Andrew Rhodey in the post more. I mean, he's done it a little bit, but like you could really have your offense become a much more post-oriented offense, and you wouldn't really have to change much. I mean, the core offense that we run has a lot of post-up options. You could just be more intentional about how you do it, like and maybe that wouldn't work at volume, but like we haven't really seen us try a lot of those things. We basically just see us try to kind of funnel the majority of our offense through McNeely and then kind of see what else comes from there. But McNeely is a great shooter, but he's not the best creator off the bounce, and he's really struggled in that role. And I think that kind of us seeing him as sort of the only way we can get offense has limited our progression in other ways.
It has seemed like there's kind of a tunnel vision. Like, all right, is McNeely working? If not, then hey, what else can you do? Because I'm like one of my favorite games this year is the NC State game where they really started featuring Elijah Saunders more, and I think that opened up things for the rest of the offense. Yeah, I just but back to roster construction. I think that there was obviously some overestimating some players' abilities when you look at a TJ Power or maybe even a Blake Buchanan just for what he had been most of the season before his little spurt that kind of ended against Notre Dame. Some miscalculations there and a lot of positional overlap. If you're only going to play Saunders at the four, well, Kofi also plays the four. TJ Power also plays the four. You know, you have all these options at the four or at the bigs, but not as many like true wing threats, I guess you could say, which I think has really hurt them this year. And really, from the get-go, you didn't really have a real wing threat. Worley was kind of a wing, but you were going to have him in the lead ball role, so he wasn't really playing the wing. He could defend wings, but wasn't really kind of like that wing that could play off of a point guard. The roster construction, and I think this is all, 2020 hindsight, because I think at the time a lot of us were kind of thinking through the possibilities, and even us on the preseason podcast, I think we made some predictions, and I was maybe a little bit more optimistic than I can't remember if Zach or you where we all kind of landed on that, but I kind of was like, oh, sure, they could be a top six team in the ACC, not really truly understanding what these limitations were going to be later in the year.
I had him as an NIT team, but even that's optimistic,
That,
right?
I don't think anyone predicted this.
Yeah, no, but I mean, it's ironic too because like someone like Leon Bond, who we kind of ostensibly had the sort of tough conversation with about how he might not have a big role this year, is at Northern Iowa, averaging 10.5 points a game, starting at guard, shooting 33% from three, and is like a really athletic wing defender. I mean, that's hindsight and to a degree, but it's just funny that that a player who would fit very well into what we need right now. Who kind of loved UVA and I think practically wanted to stay here. That happened. So it's a challenge to see all that. And I do agree that the roster construction is a big part of it. But yeah, I do think it's both. I mean, I think that there's a and the other thing is in this these second half collapses. You go into the first half and a lot of these games against good teams, especially earlier in the season where we're really close. And then the second half, it just turns into like a 20-point game. I mean, that's normally a reflection of adjustments and, coaching and keeping guys engaged and motivated. And some of it's depth and people just running out of steam, but a lot of it's just not finding the right answers or changes, after the half. So, yeah, I think that points to coaching as well.
One of the kind of, I guess, question marks over the season that don't really talk about a whole lot because it was decided so early, but kind of popped into my head this last week was Elijah Gertrude, losing him so early last offseason. So you knew, he wasn't going to be a factor this year, but just kind of daydreaming. There's not a lot else to do this time of year, but just the athleticism, another kind of secondary ball handler, and just kind of seeing because we didn't really get a great look at him last year because he was going to redshirt, he wasn't going to redshirt, he was going to, it just kind of kept going back and forth. So we didn't get a great look at him, but the flashes were there, and he obviously has the hype, coming into it.
I mean, he was one of the most exciting players last year. I thought, I mean, yes, he, I think the, one of the main reasons he didn't play was, ball security at times, although I think that was a little bit overblown, but also like, he missed some rotations here and there. So there was like that experience element. But like, I think what he was bringing was certainly valuable enough to get more run. And I really hope, no matter how things shake out, I would really love to see Elijah Gertrude wearing the colors next year and see if he can get back because he's an exciting player and I think he's the type of guy who most systems would welcome and be able to benefit from having on the floor.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, last one, and then we'll get out of here. Either there's a few interesting things to watch the rest of the season, or you're just waiting for coaching hot lists at this point.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about how I'm not writing about these games, but I do think, as a fan, so I want to acknowledge, and we've talked about this, and I know I've talked about sort of coaching, but This has been such a challenging situation for Coach Sanchez to inherit. And he has, yes, he stepped away for Charlotte, but like he's been with the team for a long time. And, I'm very appreciative that he stepped up in the way that he did, and handled it with such grace. I think by all accounts, he's such a great guy. So even though certainly I've been, talking to you about how I think we need to move forward, and I do, I want to, pay respects and watch and support the job that he's doing and the situation that he's been put in. So from that perspective, again, who knows who's going to be on this roster next year? Want to kind of give some appreciation and focus on the guys who are here, especially the guys who are still really busting it and trying really hard. Specifically, I've been just really impressed with the amount of effort that Rhodey's played with. I mean, he has his limitations, but I just love how he's just always in it and always giving his hardest no matter what. I mean, I'm very appreciative of that. So yeah, I mean, I think from like a fan perspective and just like a supporting the program and the players who are still here and, Coach Sanchez inheriting a really tough situation, I'm going to be watching for that. And I think as a fan, and as fans, we should be supporting that. On the other hand, yes, I am very much looking forward to potentially the excitement and positivity that could come with giving the program an injection of something new and some new ideas, and what could come with that. So I am, paying attention to the options that are out there, and I'm going to be really excited once we land on a name because I'm going to be diving full into. What offensive systems do they run? What defensive systems do they run? Who are we likely to bring over? Who is on their team? And then all the, potentially new players that come through. So that I think that has the potential to be an exciting time. Not enough time has passed where the program has lost its luster, in my opinion. So if we can make the right hire, that'll be exciting.
No, and yeah, I want to start with that. A lot of people made something of Micah Shrewsbury, the Notre Dame coach, his comments after the game, and kind of being very empathetic to Ron Sanchez and his situation this year. And it's like, oh, well, now we have one of the worst teams in the conference giving us pity. And it's like, well, first of all, Shrewsbury is a very well-respected coach in college basketball, and I think he's got that Notre Dame program going in the right spot. If you look at the recruiting and what they're doing there, and I like the way they play too. I think they've got some good stuff there, and obviously what he did with those Penn State teams. But it also is just a sign of like, yeah, this is a terrible hand to be dealt. Nothing was good about this situation, and it's kind of just been one thing kind of cascading over another, and so it's been really hard. But the thing that's been kind of most disheartening this year is just seeing, kind of the lack of energy, not from the fan base, but from the coaching staff, because these are guys, we've known for more than a decade now, that have been, part of this program, even going past that. I mean, if you look at Jason Williford, and some of the other people, and it just like, you can tell it's taking its toll on them, Ron especially, Kyle Guy coming back for this year and kind of having to go through this, and the other guys on that staff that used to play, Isaiah Wilkins, Chase Coleman. So yeah, you feel for that, and it's, that's why I say, when people ask, oh, are you going to start like looking at candidates? I'm like, I mean, I wouldn't do that anyways if until like maybe late February, March, because like you could look at guys now, but I always go back to, was Alabama football going to hire Kalen DeBoer had he not made that run with Washington? So you have no idea, like no idea. And look, I have trust that, obviously, athletic department is doing their due diligence and doing the search. But again, you just never know. Like maybe this one person makes a run in March Madness, and you kind of like them a little bit more than this other candidate now. It kind of, that's how these coaching searches happen. It's kind of, what'd you do for me recently? So I don't put a whole lot of stock into that stuff. Plus, a lot of the names you're seeing now are the same names that people talked about before the season anyway. So, not much has changed. Like every single list, I was like, yeah, that's what it looked like back in, October when Tony Bennett retired.
I mean, there's been, I think, rightfully some shell shock with the staff, and that is tough to see. But I mean, to your point, yeah, I don't actually get too sucked into the predictions. I'm just, will be excited if and when a decision's made to really really dive in. But, you know, I think one thing I'll say is, even though this situation was really less than ideal, I think for all parties involved, the way it happened, I mean, who knows? Maybe Coach Sanchez wouldn't have had the opportunity otherwise. But I think, you know, the silver lining in it is that, you know, if Coach Bennett had retired after the Colorado State game, you know, what do we do then? It's a bad loss. You know, do you make a more long-term commitment to Coach Sanchez? In which case, I'm not sure that would have been the correct call. Or if not, if we moved on in another direction, would there always be this kind of like, what if, right?
Yeah.
Like what if we had stuck with the Coach Bennett, you know,
Yeah.
staff, and, you know, where was the loyalty there, and some questions about that. So I think that, you know, even though this season has been really rough, you know, having the opportunity to kind of see that in action and test that out and kind of say, okay, we've seen it, we're ready to make an informed decision. I think that's for the best for everyone in terms of just maybe the closure needed, as well as kind of accepting that decision to turn the page.
No, that's a great point. Just because, you know, for a long time it's, you know, well, is Jason Wilfer going to take over? Is Ron Sanchez going to take over and kind of continue what this program has done? And obviously no one expected it to, I mean, I don't think anyone was thinking it would be this soon or that sudden.
Right.
But at least you have kind of an answer. You know, you can kind of close the book, and I'm sure there's going to be, you know, some more stuff just kind of closing down this era as we kind of proceed with this season. Obviously, we've got Tony Bennett Day coming up
Yeah.
at JPJ as well. But Cuts, want to appreciate you coming on. Obviously, you can find Cuts from the Corner on Twitter or X. And see us up there, and we'll expect to see some more stuff on your website as well. Once we kind of get into the latter part of the season and get into the off season.
Absolutely. It's been fun. Thanks, Preston, for having me.
Absolutely. All right. That is the Who's On podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. You can follow the Who's all season long at thesabre.com. Football, spring football getting going soon. Baseball getting going soon, really soon. We'll have a lot more coverage on baseball coming up. We got some exciting plans there. But also follow, subscribe to the Who's On podcast on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you find your podcasts. And we will see you later in the week.